This is Windows Observer Launch Control. We are just seconds away from the start of the Observe Tech podcast. Stand by for final sequencing and launch. In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we have launch of the Observe Tech podcast. Keeping an eye on Windows and other things tech, here is your host, Richard Hay of WindowsObserver.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 232 of the Observe Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Rich Hay from WindowsObserver.com and the super site for Windows. Good to be with you on this Saturday morning, the 3rd of June. We are in the month of June already. 2 days ago, hurricane season officially began. Here in Florida, we pay attention to that, but in all reality, hurricane season really doesn't pick up for a couple months, although there's certainly the potential. But hopefully we will have a quiet year this year during the hurricane season. So it's been a busy week. A lot of things have been happening, and we want to cover all that kind of news that came out in this past week. We've had Computex, which happened over in Taiwan. You've got a whole lot of Windows Insider adventures. If you were around on Thursday night, you experienced some of that. Google's talking about ad blocking in Chrome, and there's a little bit of a backstory to that, so we're going to talk on that. We're going to continue our discussion about the protection of systems and things like that, and there's some new stats coming out from a new study. This all ties into the WannaCrypt ransomware that ran kind of rampant last month. And I want to tell you about a new podcast that I've started to co-host this past week. Now, I shared the news with you guys back at the beginning of April that I was hired full-time by Penton Media to become the senior content producer for the Penton Media Tech channel. So that includes Supersite, that includes Windows IT Pro, our Dev Pro channels. And one of the things that I got to start to build up on is doing some new multimedia podcasting audio video type work. And you've seen some of that already on Supersite, but now we have finally published our first episode of a new IT Pro Today podcast that will be hosted on WindowsITPro.com. And it is out. It's hosted on SoundCloud. I've got a link to the show in here. So please, if you listen to this podcast, which I know is a bit of a mix of news headlines and things like that, the IT Pro Today podcast is going to be a little bit different format. We're going to talk. We're always going to endeavor to have an interview with somebody in the industry to talk about some aspect of the IT Pro world. And this podcast will definitely focus on the IT Pro side of things. Excuse me. And so we'll always talk and have some kind of an interview segment with somebody in the industry. And then we'll have a round table. Sometimes that will just be me and my co-host, Michael Morrissey, who is also my content editor on some of the tech channels. And sometimes we'll have a third person participate in our round table to talk about the news of the day and the kind of hot ticket, hot button items that have been going on. So if you get a chance, please head over there to the link in the show notes. Go to SoundCloud and search for IT Pro Today. You'll find us right there. Interesting little tidbit is that earlier this week, just before we published our first podcast of the IT Pro Today, SoundCloud apps came to Xbox and came to Windows 10 PCs. So I like to attribute that to the fact that we were coming out with our new podcast. So they got those new apps out there for us to be able to come out to your devices on. So you can even download those devices, search for IT Pro Today, and you can subscribe to our channel there. The goal will be twice a month, so every other week, and our goal is always every other Friday. So you can be looking for the next episode in a couple weeks, and I appreciate any feedback that you have about the new IT Pro Today podcast. So please go listen to episode one and join us on that new journey that we've just started. Mentioning security and stuff like that, I'm going to talk about that here in a minute, but Microsoft is hosting a Ask Microsoft Anything, so they kind of changed up that AMA or Ask Me Anything that usually is done on Reddit. They now call it an Ask Microsoft Anything, and they host it on their Microsoft Tech Community websites. Last month, you might remember, they did one about Windows as a service. This month, it's about security and all the security features that are tied into Windows 10, especially with the Creators Update, the recent release that we got in April, the third feature release for Windows 10. So make sure you mark your calendar for that. That's the 21st of June from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific time, which means 11 a.m. to noon here on the East Coast. And I've got a link in the story that I wrote on IT Pro for this that will translate that to your zone, to your time zone. So you'll be able to find your local time. Now, speaking of continuing the discussion about security, I wanted to mention some stats that I, two stories that I saw, one with some stats and another with the fact that this researcher, this is all about the WannaCry, okay? So we're still talking about WannaCry, but this was on ZDNet this past week, and they report of a security researcher who says that the reason why Windows XP was not a major target or quote-unquote did not get infected in the same levels that Windows 7 did was because WannaCry ransomware itself caused systems to bug out and caused them to crash and give a blue screen. So the program was poorly written, poorly developed, poorly whatever, and when it attempted to write or take its actions on Windows XP, it caused the system to crash, therefore not allowing not allowing it to take hold, and therefore that's why Windows XP systems were so low on the scale when it came to that infection rate. And you know, the numbers were something like close to 98% for Windows 7 systems. So this may or may not have been the case. It's an interesting little tidbit and kind of view on it. It definitely, we already know that Microsoft released an update for XP for this, even though it's out of support. And these researchers at Cryptos, you know, their suggestion was that the reason it failed was because it caused the computers to reset. And it may have, we don't know, but it's just an interesting tidbit. And then the follow-on to that is another survey, another bit of research that shows that only one out of five PC users don't use real-time protection of any kind. So they're not using an active scanner source or anything like that. This information comes from PC Pit Stop, who is a antivirus, anti-malware company, software company. And by the way, I used to work for, I used to do desktop support for them. But their survey shows that they scanned 35,000 systems, almost 36,000 systems, and it only showed that 20% of those systems, or I'm sorry, flip that, 80% of those systems had real-time security in place, 20% did not, so one out of five. So that's a big number because, you know, I've talked about protection and security over and over and over again, and you definitely have to have some kind of real-time protection in place, and then you've got to have good computing habits. You've got to be savvy when it comes to what you're seeing in email, on the web. Be careful where you're visiting because it's the more questionable sites that tend to have the worst stuff, the adware and the malware and stuff like that embedded in it. So you have to be very smart and you have to be very careful. So some stats OS wise on that, for Windows 8, it was 27% of the systems did not have real-time protection. Now I find that interesting because Windows Defender or its predecessor Microsoft Security Essentials was on Windows 8. 20% out of that 27%, 20% of those devices, so 20% out of that 100%, that represents the 27% on Windows 8, I hope I haven't totally screwed that up and confused everybody, didn't even have an AV solution installed on the computer. And you know, Windows 8 has an integrated Windows Defender AV, so it's kind of strange why they're not activated, unless they're infected. Because one of the things ransomware, malware, and adware and stuff like that does is it disables the real-time protection so that it can do its thing. Windows 7, 35% of those PCs that were scanned did not have any kind of AV real-time protection. And out of that 35%, so out of that total, 25% of those did not have a security solution installed either. Windows XP scanned, almost half of them did not have real-time AV protection, and out of that 45%, 31% of that total did not have anything installed on the PC. So, you know, people are giving a knock real hard on Microsoft through the whole Windows 10 and including Defender, but you know what? In the reality, when you look at the numbers of this whole WannaCrypt thing, Windows 10 was very low on the scale, 0.03%, like I mentioned last week, of an infection rate. When you compare that to the 98% of Windows 7, I mean, XP didn't even show up. And I, you know, if this thing was bad for XP, it was bad for all XP. But XP didn't even show up in the top 10 of systems that were infected by WannaCrypt. So it's some interesting stats. The bottom line is, you got to be protected. Whether you use the built-in Windows Defender or Windows, now it's called Windows Defender Security Center, whether you use Windows Defender on Windows 10 or Microsoft Essentials or any other company's antivirus. You should be using something real time. You don't want to use multiples. I just wrote about this on our Windows Secret newsletter. You don't want to use multiple real-time scanners because that can create some conflicts. It can create system resource drain, and it's just not good for your system. So you should stick with one solution. Maybe have some on-demand scanner standby so you can scan once a week if you want to make sure nothing's happened in the background. But good computing habits, real-time protection is going to protect you. I mean, knock on wood, I have been running Windows Defender in Windows 10 for 2 years now, almost 2 years. I ran Microsoft Security Essentials before that. And between that and good computing habits between myself and my wife is not the high-end computer user like I am, we have had no infections. And a big piece of that is smart computing habits. So the software and smart computing habits is what equals the 100% or near 100% of the protection. So always be smart, always be careful. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Windows Insider this past week. If you were sitting around on Thursday afternoon, you saw the tease that came out around, I guess it was about 5 p.m. East Coast time, my time, where I sit in Florida. We got our normal tease that Donna Sarkar sends out over Twitter to tease the release of new builds. So that happened. Now, it had been 2 weeks since a build got released, so I think a lot of people were happy. Most people then jumped on their devices and started checking for updates. Well, what had happened as they were setting up for the release of these two builds, which was 15220, I think, for mobile for feature 2 branch, and then what was the other one? I think it was 16203 was the other build that was supposed to come out. Let me pull up my blog post on this because I've got those numbers in there. Excuse me. Where do I have that? So what happened was people went to their devices, very excited about getting a new build, started checking for updates. And on mobile, people were being given a 16212 build that was from the RSIoT branch. Now, IoT means Internet of Things. That is not a build that's compatible with mobile devices. And what happened was, is those people who were able to download it and restarted their system ended up in a boot loop. Could not use the device. It forced them to a Windows device reset tool, recovery tool, where you had to use it and you had to maneuver things and manipulate the resets and the reboots in order to get it to recognize through WDRT and start the restoral process. Some people on PCs got build 16212. It was not the build they wanted us to get, obviously. It was 16203 they were trying to push to us. And what happened was those people who got it, it only went to x86 systems, so 32-bit systems, and if you were on a 64-bit build, it wasn't going to show up to you. So they had it was an issue with the engineering system. So what happened was inadvertently deployed to their engineering system that controls what builds and what rings get what, but they were quickly able to fix it. Put some blocks in place to stop it. It didn't stop things from going south for a lot of users. All right. Now, I have been told that this number is a very small number in the scheme of things when you think about how many people are in the fast ring overall. And so, yes, a lot of very vocal people on Twitter were talking about what happened. However, it affected a very small number of people. So you had the very vocal minority, which you don't want it to happen. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say they were wrong for being vocal about what happened. Microsoft gets that. The Windows Insider team gets that. That people, you know, when this kind of stuff happens, that doesn't make people happy. So it happened. There's a resolution for it. I've got a post up, in fact, that gives you the instructions for how to take care of this if you downloaded it to your phone and how you can get sorted out. And there, you know, the solution for PC is easy. Revert back within 10 days to 16199. Or hang on until the next build or a newer build than 16212 comes out. And you just get an early look at what 16212 looks like down the road. If you're on mobile and I stopped Wi-Fi, so I turned off my Wi-Fi. That stopped the download process. I set my date 20 years in advance, rebooted, checked for updates again. It cleared and timed out, put my date back to normal, checked for updates, and there was nothing waiting for me because Microsoft had pulled it on their end the night before. So there are resolutions. There are some sequences of keys, of buttons you can press on your phone in order to try to get the Windows device recovery tool to recognize your phone, put it in flash mode, and restore yourself back to the last commercial release that came to your handset, and then you can work your way back up through the Insider builds and process. So not a great thing, but it happened, and they dealt with it very quickly over the course of about 5 hours. And, you know, so now things are in place to try to help prevent that from happening in the future. And we just keep moving forward, okay? All right, another great story about the insider stuff was A Tale of Two Colonels that got written out this week by Jason Howard, who's one of the PMs on the Windows Insider Engineering team. And it's a story about how two people had an experience that turned out to be very unique to their hardware, required a BIOS update, and you can read through the story and the process that took several weeks and a couple of really patient insiders who got their stuff sorted out through patience and just dealing with the issue and allowing the team to work through. And because these two people noticed the issue, Microsoft, once they identified the issue, was able to block the update from going to other people with the similar hardware until it was sorted out, and then they were able to lift that block and let it go out to everybody else. So it's a great story. Please take a moment to read that and catch up on that. And then now jumping into a little bit of Microsoft news. You know, we've had Build 2017 already last month. The following week was Google I/O. A lot of artificial intelligence and AI discussions were had on those platforms and those keynote stages and in those side sessions. But there's a very interesting story here from Frederick Lardinos from TechCrunch that talks about the AI wars and that he believes Microsoft has the clearer vision, and he lays out why that is. And by doing so, he's comparing the two keynotes, the two CEOs, and the content that was provided in these two big events, and really does lay out the story for how Microsoft is moving forward with their AI implementation and Google's still getting there. So that's another good read. Let's see. Excuse me. Ballmer. Yeah, this past week was CodeCon, right? So Recode did their CodeCon. It was Walt Marsberg's last event. He's retiring from the tech journalism community. But they had some. They always have interesting characters and people up on stage to talk and do live interviews. And they had one with Ballmer. And what's interesting about the Ballmer interview is that, you know, he talked about some of the regrets he had as Microsoft CEO that he didn't move towards hardware sooner. You know, he was the guy who bought Nokia, and, you know, that did not turn out so well. And that was very late in the game and the whole bit. So it's an interesting kind of perception. And one of the quotes he used that I found very interesting was that he thought he was just too slow in certain cases to recognize the need for new capabilities, especially in hardware. He says he wished we'd built the capability to be a world-class hardware company, because one of the new expressions of software is essentially the hardware. The company under my leadership should have built that capability earlier than we did. So it is exactly where they're at with Surface. Surface has been built as hardware to feature the expression of the software. And he's got some regrets about that. I mean, I don't think any of us don't come away from a position and think that there aren't some things we wish we'd have done better. He probably needs to stop beating himself up about it. But I also, you know, respect the fact that he's willing to set up on a stage, a very public stage, a live stream stage, and admit to these kind of failures as well. So real good story there, real good read on. If you are running Windows 10 and you've seen a really strange pop-up on your screen in the course of running your system, apparently there is some kind of a background task when it comes to Office 365, or Office maybe even, that has to run, and for whatever reason, it runs on the desktop. So you get a quick flash of a command window and it's gone. And that's freaking some people out, because that appears to be like something's happening that shouldn't happen. Well, it's a misconfiguration issue or something that it's being displayed. It should be run in the background. But there are some solutions to take care of it. It has been fixed, as I understand it, from Microsoft. You can disable the task that's running on your system now to stop it from happening. But maybe just understanding that it's supposed to be happening is okay. There's going to be a fix coming out soon. But it's one way to get rid of the window is the solution here from the GHacks guys. So you can check that out. Another tip from talking security and stuff like that, this one from Ed Bott this past week, is about BitLocker and how you can use your BitLocker to encrypt your system drive and protect it, whether it contains personal files or confidential files. But if it's a device that supports BitLocker, there's certainly no harm in turning it on and protecting it, but your system's got to be able to support it. So that's a good tip from Ed this week. Microsoft Planner app for iOS and Android is now available to anyone with an Office 365 subscription. Now, Planner is a new feature for Office 365. However, you have to be on the Enterprise E1 through E5. the Business Essentials or the Business Premium and Education subscription plans in order to use this. So it's a way for you to kind of do plans and tasks among your team, even for yourself individually, but you've got to be on one of those enterprise or business level subscription plans to use that. Now for education, all of education is getting Office 365 for free now. So they have the opportunity to get that as well, even though for their level of subscription. So that's a good update. OneNote is now testing their next set of updates. And in fact, there's a OneNote has a great product update page. And what they do is this is their release notes, and it's got two tabs. It's got what's the latest for everyone and what's the latest for Office Insiders. And Office Insiders just got an update on the Fast Ring for the OneNote Universal Windows Platform app. And they detail all of those changes. It's got a whole new, not a whole new navigation system, but things are laid out a little bit differently between the notebooks, the sections, and the pages to make them easier to navigate and to move around. There's more tools now to help resolve page conflicts. You can now choose how you lay out your pages, and the previews will give you a glance into those. Hide in subpages, so if you don't want to see subpages, you can choose to hide them in a notebook. Control F to search, that's something that was in the desktop OneNote app that's now available in the Universal Windows Platform app. Finding more information about how to do things and how to fix things. And then there's, of course, the ability to nickname your notebooks and change the colors of those notebooks. Better multitasking, because now you can open up two windows of the same instance of the Universal Windows Platform app, which I love because I'm using the Windows Universal Platform app exclusively now to prepare my notes and to save pages that come to me for my notes here. So I love being able to open two windows side by side, either on a single desktop monitor or on my dual monitor desktop, and easily move things back and forth between those two things in order to prepare, for instance, my show notes for this podcast or now the new IT Pro podcast. So a lot of new improvements. I have completely eliminated the desktop OneNote app from my repertoire. It's still on my system, but I don't use it. I exclusively use the Windows UWP app. Now, I recently went through some major changes in how I approach the UWP app. I'd been having a lot of problems with syncing because what I do, as part of my routine, some of you may have heard this before, when I find a page or a story that I want to talk about in this show, I take and I use from Microsoft Edge, I use the share tool, I share it to OneNote, and I share it. I had a notebook called WindowsObserver.com that had podcasts that had my show notes and my podcast items. So you always, even when you're sharing through Edge, you have to have that, your UWP app open to that folder that you want to share to, or else it's not selectable. So when you go to select from the dropdown. So you know, that was always a bit of a challenge because if I happened to not be in that the last time, then it wasn't prepared for the share and I couldn't share. I had to go into OneNote, change that, access that folder, and then go share it. So I looked at things and said, you know what? I should use the Quick Notes, because Quick Notes, you always have to have a default Quick Notes. And by default, on every Windows 10 system running OneNote, when you use the Share To tool, that is always available in that dropdown. It doesn't matter where you left off at in that notebook or what notebook, the Quick Notes is always available. So my first attempt was to create one notebook, share it amongst all my devices, and I'm talking about two desktops, a tablet, two laptops, okay? So I tried that, but every time I added that Quick Note to another device, it just added another Quick Note folder to that notebook. And so I ended up with Quick Notes, Quick Notes 2, Quick Notes 3, Quick Notes 4. And that created an issue when I tried to share because it wasn't always the default selected folder for those different devices. So this may very well not be the way to do this, but it's the way I'm doing it, and it's working well after a week. So what I then did was I created a new notebook on each of my devices, and I named that notebook Quick Notes and then the designator for that device. So S8 is for my Surface or my Samsung Galaxy 8. MDT, Quick Notes MDT is for my Quick Notes main desktop. Quick Notes PC, Podcaster. Quick Notes HP, the HP Spectre. Quick Notes SB, the Surface Book. And so you get my drift, right? So, and then I put my Quick Notes, I set my default Quick Notes folder into each one of those for each device. And then I went to the other devices in OneNote, and I opened up all these other notebooks in the in OneNote for them. So now I have a list of notebooks that's OneNote MDT, OneNote PC, OneNote S8, OneNote SP, OneNote HP, OneNote PC. And so they're all there. So now on any device, when I pull up and share, by default, it comes up to that device's notebook and its quick note folder. So I, having them open on all the devices, I can, they sync to all the devices, and I can open them on all the devices. Three other notebooks that I have open on each device now through OneNote is my Observe Tech podcast notebook, where I store my notes and my podcast items, and then my new IT Pro Today podcast folder and my archive folders. So now, using the tools like Move, I can move podcast items from the individual notebooks into my main Observe Tech notebook and my podcast items right from any device. So I, because they all sync, it's been working great. I know that all probably sounds very confusing, and I am going to write this up on Supersite as a hack, as a solution that you could use to maybe manage more. I mean, I know I'm a unique user in the fact that I use so many different devices through testing and other reasons that I share content to my, to save for the podcast from all kinds of devices throughout the course of my day or week. So this is how I've come up with the solution for that. I will write this up. It will be a story to share the experience with you and how I did it, so that you all, if you're in a similar situation, can do the same thing. Like I said, after a week, this is working gangbusters for me. And stuff is ending up where it's supposed to end up. I can easily stick it in the podcast items folder. And then using this new multi-instance feature, I can open up two versions of my notebooks, one on my podcast notes for the show, the episode I'm working on, and one for podcast items. And I can easily move things back and forth to create my show notes, which then go on to help me, first off, record this show and follow my list of items, and then create my notes after the fact. So it, for me, it's been a great hack so far. So I'll share more about that with you later. All right, let's see what else is. Immersive Reader has now come to Outlook on the web in OneNote for Windows 10 app. So the Immersive Reader is the ability for you to be able to have text read aloud while it highlights that text as you're looking at it. So it helps with decoding, fluency, comprehension, and it, but it helps keep you focused and attentive to what you're doing. The spacing, it optimizes the font spacing in a narrow column to view and improve the reading fluency for users with visual crowding issues. It breaks things into syllables, and it helps you understand the parts of speech. So this immersive reader is now available through Outlook on the web and the OneNote app in Windows 10. And it's gone out to more languages now as well, I think, is the other big thing here. Let me see if I can find that. Yeah, Arabic, Czech, English, French, German, Greek, Hebrew, Hindi, Hungarian, Indonesian, Romanian, Slovak, and Thai. So, you know, it's really starting to spread out there on its global level. And so if you want that kind of support and features, it's there, and you can get that turned on in those apps and services. Skype had a big announcement this week. They announced, which, by the way, they've announced a new look of Skype, and they're calling it the next generation of Skype. They only released an Android app at this point. They say the Windows and iOS apps will come later. I'm on Android. I'm on the Galaxy S8. And I'm now 2 days beyond this thing being released, and I still haven't seen the update arrived for my device, so I'm still waiting to see it. But, you know, the comparisons online is, you know, they've built better places to share, chat, and explore. People are calling it the Snapchat of Skype of Snapchat, or Snapchat of Skype. And so, you know, you can make your own interpretation. It's got ability to connect you with your contacts. They really are trying to make Skype a central kind of communications unit. You know, they tried that with SMS and when messaging anywhere went away. But you can check that out, wait for it to be available, and then you can check out the new features on that. But there is a blog post from June 1st by the Skype team, so I've got a link in the show notes to that for you. Edge continuing to become more and more responsive. There's a good blog post this week on the Microsoft Edge dev blog by Nolan Tawson, Todd Reifstek, and Rachel Neighbors that talks about timers and speeding up the presentation of information on the web page and not blocking it because certain timers haven't gone off. And they give you great comparison video and content. And, you know, if you're a geek and you love to kind of understand the background of how that stuff all fits together and works and how they're making big changes to, you know, give content priority over the UI of the browser page itself, then you definitely want to check this out and read it. Windows 10 market share. It's the beginning of the new month. That means we always hear about market share. There are two companies that do this. Net Market Share is one, and then StatCounter is the other. When they talk about the stats this week, or it looks like, let me pull it up and just go down the list here for the numbers. 49.46% of the, now remember, I've said this to you before, these numbers reflect systems that have accessed systems or sites that use this service. So they have to be somehow involved with Net Market Share and tracking through that. So it's not 100% of the devices on the web, but it certainly gives you a snapshot, and you can pretty much extrapolate where things are, but just to be aware. So they're reporting 49.46% for the month of May were Windows 7 based devices. That is up just a percentage point from the month before, so it's kind of fluctuated. Let's see, you can go back all the way to May of last year, and Windows 7 has fluctuated anywhere between 47 and 49% share of the net, based on net market share. Windows 10 a year ago was at 17.43. It's now sitting at 26.78. So I'm trying, let me look down this list of numbers. So 17, 19, 21, 22, a little bit of a drop, a little bit of a rise, 23, 24, 25, a little bit of a drop, 25 up, 26, 26. So it's kind of had a couple spots where it's fluctuated as well on the Windows 10 side. XP side last year was 10% in May. This year, 5.66%, so almost a 50% drop there. Windows 8 was 8.7, almost 9% last year. It's now down to almost 7. So I don't know if I would call it a stalemate, because both of them have kind of, you know, the Windows 10 has certainly grown the most when you compare what Windows 7 has lost compared to what Windows 10 has grown. But Windows 7 is kind of hovering in this 4% range, 3 or 4% range, whereas Windows 10 is making a move forward. But for the last 3 or 4 months, they've also been hovering in the same kind of 2% goal. If you go down and look at the StatCounter numbers, StatCounter says that Windows 7 is 46.35%, Windows 10 is 35.76%, and Windows 8.1 is 9.45%, with Windows XP being just over 5%. So it's, again, they're great stats to look at and get a concept and an idea of. They aren't the pure gospel, but they certainly represent a slice of the internet, and so therefore they sometimes can be extrapolated to broader numbers. Let's see. Bing Visual Search. This past week, the Bing blog talked about a new service that they're working on, that where you can take an image, take an item from that image and highlight it and do further searches for that item. Say if you're looking at a picture of a house or a picture of a dining room and you wanted to identify a piece of furniture or a lampshade or a lamp, you could use this tool for that. And so pretty neat way they're using AI to help identify items in a photo, and therefore extrapolating that out. I've really started using this term extrapolate a lot. Sorry about that. In order to take that search further and to find other of those items that you've highlighted in the image. This past week, Xbox Game Pass went live to everybody. I think last week I mentioned that it was available to Xbox Live Gold subscribers. I've done a video on this for the Super site and an introduction to it, so you can check that out. But Xbox Game Pass, $9.99 a month, unlimited access to the games, unlimited playtime. You can keep them as long as they're in the library and your subscription is active. 112 games to start with. About two-thirds of that are Xbox 360 backwards compatible games. About 40-odd of those. So you have 72 or so that are Xbox 360. About 40-odd that are Xbox One. And then you have a handful that are the independent developer channel ID at Xbox. So you can check that out. Microsoft Edge has grown this week. Well, I say grown this week. I learned this week that there's now 35 extensions in the Windows Store for Microsoft Edge. That's a growth of about 12 extensions over the course of the last few months. This is not earth-shattering growth. Don't get me wrong. I'm still on my point that there needs to be a public submission process so more and more people can submit browser extensions. It's the only way Edge is going to grow, is that when people can find their extension on there and move over to that. But 35 now, so that's something. That's something to be said. We were at 23 3 months ago. Microsoft is making the Mac look old and stale. Now, next week, Apple is having their WWDC. That's their developer conference. Now, we don't know if we will have product announcements around that. Some people think we will. I said weeks and weeks ago that I think Apple is going to announce their own Siri smart speaker kind of thing. We may see a hardware refresh on iPhone as well as the Mac. But we'll have to wait and watch that. I forget what day next week that is, but that is happening next week. But this story by Adrian Kingsley Hughes on ZDNet in the Hardware 2.0 column talks about how Microsoft is making big advances when it comes to their hardware and in comparison to where the MacBook is and all the other Apple hardware is. Productivity, this was a great story this past week from Lisa Schmeiser. She's my content editor on the Supersite for Windows at Penton. But talking about amid your digital declutter, you know, we keep a lot of things digitally. I admit I'm a digital hoarder. It's only ones and zeros, and as long as I've got the hard drive space, why not keep stuff? And I know everybody doesn't agree with that. But she talks about different ways we can take a look and declutter our lives a little bit, our digital lives. And that led me to write a story about a feature that's coming in Windows 10 Redstone 3 for hard drive decluttering. It's a new feature in StorageSense, which was something that was introduced in Creators Update for a way to help you maintain like your temporary folder and temporary files used by apps. Now there's an option in the Redstone 3 builds as of 16199. It's definitely in there, and I expect this is going to remain through to the end, although it is pre-release software, which means there's no guarantee. But again, there's no real reason why this wouldn't stay. But it's a new option in StorageSense to turn on and clear your downloads folder every 30 days of anything that's not been used or accessed or downloaded. So it's another way to help keep that folder clean and clear. Now, it's been interesting. I've had a couple comments on that story because I labeled that story as that folder, the downloads folder, as a temporary storage spot. And somebody disagreed with me on that, and I'm fine with the disagreement, but someone else also responded about the fact that, you know what, if it's stuff you want to keep long-term anyway, like a document or something like that, you should be moving it. You should be moving it to your more permanent storage, and that downloads folder becomes a transient place. So it's a spot where you can stick stuff briefly when it downloads, and once you're ready to sort it out, you move it and put it in a proper long-term storage spot. Just an interesting kind of perspective, but it's a great tool. It's an easy setting to turn on. It's one toggle, and then you've got it up and running. Another tip I shared this week on the IT Pro website was that this new tool called MBR2GPT, that is the Master Boot Record to GUID Partition Table Converter Tool. And so if you have a UEFI BIOS, WiFi, however you want to pronounce it, and you're running the Windows 10 Creators Update, you can actually convert the hard drive to a compatible UEFI format without destroying the system and having to reformat from scratch. And it allows you to make that change during the upgrade process or afterwards to Creators Update. And now you can take advantage of more features that are there for security and stuff because you're running a UEFI compatible disk format. Computex. This week was Computex, and there's just a ton of links here that I've got from the official Microsoft blog. I've got it from other hardware sites that were at Computex. But, I mean, we've just seen so many different things released this week, and I think it's a real testament. This gets back to that hardware discussion in Microsoft and the hardware being an expression for the software. And you can now see partners, OEMs, that are building Windows 10-based devices are getting extremely creative. They're building some real high-quality stuff. It's not that plastic stuff that we had when Windows 8 came out. We truly have a bunch of devices that are unique, well-built, and built from very good materials and bring in a lot of great features. And we're starting to see more OEMs embrace the convertible format, the 2-in-1, inking, and including their own pens and active pens and other types of pens that also recognize the pressures and stuff like that. So if Microsoft's goal with Surface was to create hardware that built the expression of the software and kind of drove the OEMs to a new level, it has succeeded, especially when you watch Computex this week. So we've got Acer announcing new hardware. We got GeForce announcing new hardware. We've got Intel announcing the new Core i9 chipset, 18-core Skylake X, Kaby Lake X, and the X299 chipsets. They're expensive. Some of them high-end are $2,000, but those are coming. We had Dell announce new all-in-ones, VR gaming desktops, Asus with their ZenBook and VivoBook laptops, Acer with their new Spin 1 notebooks and Nitro 5 gaming line of computers, Asus and the Republic of Gamers devices, Microsoft talked about always connected PCs. This is that Windows on ARM play. This is that eSIM play, maybe even LTE compatibility play. That is probably the base for this mobile move that Microsoft is in the process of making, and that got talked about this past week. And, you know, this whole ability to be Windows 10 on mobile, not Windows 10 mobile. So the difference between those two phrases. So they talked about those connected PCs. We found out from them and Qualcomm, who's going to be building some of these first devices based on Windows on ARM. Samsung announced new notebooks. Asus new, I got that Asus link in there twice. Okay, I'll take that out. And so I did a story earlier this week about the mixed reality headsets, because another part of the announcement was we got to see more of the mixed reality headsets. So we got to see, at Build 2017 last month in Seattle, we got to see the Acer, which we'd seen before. We got to see the HP headset as well. They became available for pre-order. But I even had the opportunity to use the Acer headset, and that's the one we have coming pre-ordered that should arrive in August that we're going to do our work on for SuperSight and the Penton Technology sites. But so we now have we've been able to see the other companies and their devices, such as you got Acer, okay, so Acer is one. You got Asus, who's coming out with a really slick-looking one. Dell's white one. HP, of course, is one of the pre-order devices. Lenovo's. And so we got to see, and then while we were at Build, 3Glasses, they're also building one. They have their current, what they call their Bluebird S1 that uses outside-in tracking, and they're also building a headset that is, according to Microsoft specs, that will do the inside-out tracking as well. But, you know, the great thing about these devices is compatibility. So those new controllers that were announced at Build, I think I've told you this before, they will be compatible with any of those devices because those devices are built to a spec. So that's a nice little feature. Acer is going to sell a combo of those, right? They're going to sell a combo for Christmas, for the holidays. But we're getting really close to here. You know, we got some of the framework software in Windows 10 Creators Update with the Windows Mixed Reality Portal. The Fall Creators Update is probably going to continue to build on that. And that will be right around the time, September-ish, and maybe within a couple months of that, we will finally see the hardware on the market. And I am really excited about seeing where this goes. Speaking of virtual reality, just the other day, I received the Samsung Gear VR that is part of the Samsung Galaxy 8 test set. And I have not broke it out yet. I'm going to do an unboxing video for that. But I'm looking forward to diving into that. I've used Google Cardboard, but I've never used a full mount, you know, device with the proper headset and headphones and all that kind of stuff. So I am really, really looking forward to that, more than just videos with that. So that's a whole nother ball of wax. But we're getting there. We're very slowly getting there. And like I said, Computex really showed the future when it comes to hardware and where OEMs are going and how they're handling things. So lots to read and catch up about Computex itself. Some other things to be aware of. There was a great story this week on NeoWin by Gary Weir about C-Shell Feature 2 and the future of Microsoft's mobile plans. And it's right along the lines of what I've been talking about and what I've already mentioned in this program, in this episode, is that, you know, it's Windows 10 on mobile, not Windows 10 mobile, and how these smaller devices that may have eSIMs, may have physical LTE chipsets, where you stick a SIM card in there, will take advantage of this new kind of formatting system, C-Shell, that will help it adapt to different screen sizes and give you more and more capabilities. Let's see. So lots of data to look at when it comes to hardware. By the way, speaking of hardware, Surface Laptop, the high-end laptop, originally was not supposed to ship until August timeframe. That now looks like it's going to ship by June 30th. So that's an even better move forward for Surface Laptop purchasers who want that high-end i7 device. Google, couple things with Google. First off, big, huge fraud network they just discovered in their Play Store. Now, I don't download apps like this. I have zero reason, but the malware was called Judy. It's an auto-clicking adware, and it was found on 41 apps developed by the same company out of Korea. And it's a malware that uses infected devices to generate fraudulent clicks on ads to generate revenues for the folks behind it. They also found some other ones that had this in there, but they have cleaned this up and have addressed it. There's a whole list of the ad. It's all the same type of app. Judy in the title, I'd probably avoid it. That was the name of the malware. And then we also heard this week about Chrome. They confirmed they are going to build a version of Chrome that will have a built-in ad blocker. And there's two stories to read about this is, you know, their perception of this. Now, Google is an ad company, and they're going to build a version of Chrome to block ads. So there's two kind of points here. They are very unlikely to block ads that they find to be in accordance with the standards. They're saying they're going to use the standards. So that will probably include their ads. But the blocking service, you know, right now a lot of websites are popping up a pop-up when you go there with an ad blocker turned on, and they're saying, hey, we noticed you have an ad blocker. To keep reading, give us $1 a month or turn off your ad blocker. So what Google is going to do is take that a step further and become the middleman and the service provider, and they will start a process where users will pay Google to turn off ads on certain sites by paying a fee, and then Google will have a fee, and then they'll pay back some of that to the publisher and to the websites. And I think I already saw at least one company talk about the fact that they're already part of Google's plan to do this. So obviously they're going to be starting to test it soon. But so they may be blocking ads, but they're certainly not giving up revenue because they're building in a revenue-based system and a revenue-sharing system with the publishers to be able to do this. So it works in Google's favor, but I think you got to be careful here because, you know, for other legitimate ad-based systems, Google's not the only one. This may become part of a problem for them because Google may choose to be blocking them, and their ads are blocked, therefore not showing, therefore not generating revenue. But Google has got a subscription-based program in for them and the publisher of the site, not of the ads. So there's a lot more to be seen here and to see where that goes or doesn't go. Excuse me. Samsung Chromebook Pro. This was funny to get a kind of a big deal story this week. A lot of attention on a lot of hardware at Computex for Windows 10. So Chromebook kind of floated back up into vision this week on Samsung's Chromebook Pro. Customer service. This was an interesting story I actually got from my wife. She saw the link and during her visit on a website and talked about it. But they were comparing a 10-year difference between 2004 and 2014 and the differences in customer service. And bottom line up front, it basically comes down to customers, cell phones, smartphones, pictures, you know, trying to connect to Wi-Fi, having problems connecting to Wi-Fi, that delay in the order taking, that delay in the delivery of food. Food arrives on the table, pictures are taken and by people back and forth, and food gets cold, gets sent back to the kitchen. It is an interesting kind of juxtaposition of what is going on in that world. But it's a good read, so I definitely recommend you go check that link out. Syncing your Windows 10 PC with your iPhone, iPad, and Android device. This was written by Lance Whitney on SuperSite this week. It's a good story for how to do that, and it's interesting because this is exactly what Microsoft is wanting to do to make your system kind of ecosystem surrounded by a Windows 10 device or having a Windows 10 device at the hub and then being able to share stuff and carry on stuff not only from your device, your say your desktop to your phone, but from your phone to your desktop. That's that Windows timeline feature. So it's a good read, though, but it's possible to do this stuff now, and he gives instructions on how to do that. Let's see, Project Vermont, another garage Microsoft research project. You know, when I did the campus tour a couple weeks ago, we heard a big chunk, an hour and a half, from the Microsoft research team. It's pretty amazing some of the stuff they're doing. But this latest thing is to improve camera performance through curved image sensors. So they give you some details about how that helps them to improve the overall camera images. We might see this make its way into software and hardware. Star Trek Bridge Crew is now available for HTC Vive, Oculus Rift, and PlayStation VR. I saw it when I was looking through the Oculus stuff that with the Gear VR. I saw it there, but it's a $50 program. I'm not sure I can justify $50 for a VR program. I'm just not sure I'm there yet. But I'm really looking forward to this whole Gear VR thing and the new experience of that instead of just watching videos and interacting with the controller and things like that. That's something you guys are going to hear from me about, no doubt. But because it's Star Trek and the video of it's cool where people are interacting with each other on a virtual bridge and giving orders and commands back and forth and interacting on their own levels, it's just too cool. Speaking of VR, Samsung has announced new virtual reality partnerships with UFC, the X Games, and Live Nation. So they're bringing more live content. I was looking through the Samsung VR app this morning, and they have a lot of different channels for content. You know, when I got Google Cardboard last year, just for the fun of it, it was a very limited set of stuff that was available. There wasn't a lot of live stuff and things like that. That has changed now. Samsung is pushing out that kind of content. So it'll be very interesting to kind of sit back with this thing on and see what those experiences are like. Over at Amazon, they've been ordered to pay $70 million in refunds over unauthorized in-app purchases. Most of these are, the big story and focus was your kids making accidental purchases, but Amazon has to fork out some money there. Their stock's at almost $1,000 a pop, so I'm sure they can afford that. At CodeCon this week, Mary Meeker presented her 2017 Internet Trends Report. If you have never read through this report, you should. It's massive. It's huge. But there are some great summarizations of it out there, or you can just kind of flick through the slides and catch the things that catch your eye. It covers all kinds of subjects and content that we experience these days online and on the internet, and it is well worth your time to take some time to go through it and just kind of highlight some stuff. The final thing I want to share is, did you see that airplane that Paul Allen is the co-founder of Microsoft, right? And he now owns, I think the basketball isn't, no, the football team, right? He owns the football team, at least in Seattle, the Seahawks. But he is now getting into a rocket launching business type of thing. And he rolled out this airplane this past week that is just simply massive. And it's an airplane that is going to be used to launch rockets into orbit. Now, the company that we're talking about here is Stratolaunch. He actually announced that company about 6 years ago. Test flights were supposed to have already started, but that's not happened yet. Burt Rutan is working on this project, and he's very well known for, I think he may have tested some of the early Virgin stuff. But they rolled this airplane out, and I'm not kidding you. When you look at this thing, it is simply massive, and I want to see it fly. I want to see this thing fly because it is massive. It's got 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 wheels on each carriage. So there's two fuselages, one massive wing across the fuselages, and then each have their own separate tails. 385-foot wingspan. That's as wider than the Spruce Grouse. It has 6 747 jet engines, 26 wheels set on the ground. It carries 250,000 pounds of fuel, and it weighs 500,000 pounds without the fuel in it. So you're talking about 750,000 pounds in full weight. It needs 12,000 foot of runway to take off, and most commercial aircraft in comparison need 4,000 feet less, so just 8,000 feet of runway. So it's extremely interesting. I think they're talking about their first launch in 2019 in a couple years, and the first test flights of this aircraft are coming up in 2019. No, in the coming weeks and months. I can't wait. I want to see that thing in the air. I want to see it take off. I want to see what that looks like. Oh my goodness, this is just going to be something else. Okay, so that is episode 232 for you. Glad you tuned in. Thank you for being a listener. If you got any questions or comments or concerns, find me on Twitter at WinOBS. Of course, you can go to windowsobserver.com and use the contact form, and that will send me an email directly. And I always try to get back to folks who contact me through windowsobserver.com. And, of course, always over on winsupersite.com or even windowsitpro.com, you'll find me there. And please, don't forget, go check out episode 1 of the IT Pro Today podcast that myself and Michael Morrissey are hosting and have just started. We're really looking forward to that. Podcast becoming our regular thing every 2 weeks, giving you more and new perception, new perspectives on things in the IT pro world. So until next week, oh, by the way, next week, a little bit of a shuffle. I have some obligations next weekend, so I will not be available behind a microphone. So I will be doing the show on Monday morning. So it'll be a couple days later than normal. So just be aware of that. But until then, stay safe and keep your systems up to date. Take care.